Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Full Draw Friday. I'm Canyon. That's Austin on the other side of the screen over there. We're going to be talking about the top five public land hunting mistakes this week. Some of them that we've come up with. We know there's a lot that you see, but these are some of the ones we think are the biggest ones we see most often when it comes to hunting public ground. So stay tuned for that. Before we get into it, don't forget about Rack's Big Game Supplements. They are our partner for Full Draw Friday. You can go to racksmineral.com and check them out. Use the code FULLDRAW, that's all caps, and you get 15% off your order there. Austin, how you doing, man? I'm excited about getting into this public land stuff.
I know, I'm excited too. Anybody who's followed along my channel for a while knows about my public land background and how much I enjoy it and the kind of success we've
guru,
had. Actually,
guru of sorts.
All of these deer you see right here are all public land deer. So
right. Hey, okay, this is a good chance to do this. Turn your camera and show them, because I can see on my computer, but the people need to see your whole studio. Keep going.
Yeah. So that's about as far as we got there.
Yep.
We got some deer there, some sheds. So the studio is still kind of in the works, but overall,
it looks pretty good.
It's back where it was.
Yeah.
Overall, I'm liking where it's at.
But that right there is
the big one's upstairs.
Is it? Yeah. Well, where it should be.
Exactly.
That's basically your public land resume, though, right? That room.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So you're qualified in my eyes. I don't know what anybody else thinks, but we're going to listen to you. No, that's part of the reason I wanted to get into this, though. I think it's going to be an interesting topic for a lot of people. Probably some mistakes that, you know, even we make from time to time that you just kind of need reminded of. But I'm sure there's a lot of people out there, too, that maybe are doing some of this stuff that they don't even realize it. So it's going to be good, I think, to dive in and talk about what we think are the top five things. You know, like I said, there's so many things that you can kind of pick on and say, hey, you could do this better. There's always stuff you could do better, right? But these are some of the heavy hitters. And some people in the comments might say, hey, you forgot about this one or that one. That's great. Leave them in the comments. That way you might help somebody
out.
But these are, we were kind of brainstorming, and we came up with these ones. The first one we want to talk about, because it kind of ties into what we've been talking about a little bit on some of our other series, is poor access. And, you know, just like we always talk about, some of these are going to have overlap between public and private ground, and this is when you see a lot on private, but definitely public ground, like poor access is going to ruin your hunt before it ever gets started, no matter where you're at, right?
Absolutely. And that's something, you know, you talk about, you know, these possibly being mistakes that we've made through the years, and that's exactly right. You know, part of the learning process to making the wall look the way it looks is, you know, learning these mistakes, making these mistakes, realizing that was the specific mistake that you made, and then adjusting it, you know, making the adjustments, learning from those mistakes, and then just not making them again.
Right.
You know, there's a multiple of these deer that I can talk about and tell you the stories about them. And they tie directly into proper access routines, you know, and not only for the day that I ended up shooting him, but for the scouting that went into it. And if I was able to use trail cameras, checking those trail cameras, you know, just the overall correct access through the entire process. Because if that deer picked me up at any point in that process, my game was essentially off, you know what I mean? Or I was trying to reel it back in. He was tipped off to my presence there, and that could have kept me from harvesting that buck, you know? And with public land versus private land, you have to plan on that buck already being bumped. Yep. You have to go into it already knowing that deer more than likely has been bumped multiple times. So do everything in your power to keep that from you now being the reason that he's bumped off on a private, essentially, that he's kind of moved off the area for a period of time.
Yep. There's
That's
a saying
approach I like to.
Yeah. There's a saying on private land guys or on private ground a lot, and it's public too. We're talking about growing bigger deer, and I'm sure you've heard it. Everybody's heard it. Guys that they want bigger deer, but they won't pass the younger deer. And a lot of times the excuse is, well, if I don't shoot it, the neighbors will, right? Well, we always say, okay, that's fine, but if you shoot that deer, you're that neighbor you're talking about, right? Like, if you shoot him, he definitely has no chance because he's dead right there. If you let him go, at least he has a chance to grow, right? Similarly, with access on public ground, a lot of guys, I think, line of thinking is, well, I don't necessarily need to be cognizant of my access because somebody else is just going to come up and mess it up anyway. Well, maybe, but if you do that and you don't pay attention to your access, you're ruining your hunt. Whereas if you pay attention and you do things right, there's also a chance somebody else won't come and ruin it for you, right?
Yeah.
But you've just killed that whole thing if you go in there and you're the one making the bad access. So just because you're on public, don't forget about all these tactics and strategies, especially access, just because somebody else might come in there and do the opposite of what you're trying to do. Could that happen? Absolutely. That's part of it, hunting on public. But you don't want to be the reason that, like you said, that buck gets bumped onto private or hits that third strike, you're out. He finally just leaves the area because he's had enough of it. And that's the other side of it too. Yeah, maybe somebody came in there and he did spook him a couple times, but there's no reason for you to be that third time or however many times it takes, right? You know, on public ground, they might be a little more tolerant if they've gotten away with being in a certain location, right? If they see the guy coming and they split and they're out of there, they might come back to that same bed. They may do it another two or three times, but eventually they're going to get tired of it, right? So you don't want to be the one that pushes them over the edge just because your thinking is, well, if I am careful and I pay attention to my access and I do all these things, my wind and scent control and where I'm walking on the way in and out when I'm checking cameras, all that kind of stuff, if you're not doing all that stuff just because somebody else might not be, you're the problem.
And I like that you brought that up because it also ties into nothing on public is secret, right? If you think that you've got a hidden honey hole that nobody else knows about, forget it. Somebody's been there. Okay, just get over the idea of finding a spot that nobody else goes to. It doesn't exist, and it just doesn't. Unless you're way out west and in some big wilderness areas, but for the majority of us hunting Midwest public land whitetail, those spots don't exist. Period, end of story.
Right.
But these bucks have learned how to survive in those areas, okay? If you do everything right, you can be that one that kills the buck that nobody else is killing. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
He survives because nobody else is paying attention to their access, paying attention to the scent control and their wind, and being conscious of their hunting and scouting strategies, right? But you are, and he doesn't know you're there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So you can beat him at his own game, beat an expert, you know, beat that expert of survival at his own game where everybody else is getting busted before they even get a chance at that deer.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So that's the other thing too, is not just knowing that he's been bumped and not being that last person to bump him, but also know that there's a decent chance there's multiple people hunting him and maybe even hunting that general location, right? But because you have done a better job of it, you are going to be the one that actually shoots that deer when everybody else is just hunting.
Exactly.
And
never seeing
them. And never seeing them.
Yep.
You know, so that's the thing. And that's what has kind of led to this success. You know, I'm not in secret honey hole spots, right? Like I said, they don't exist. Mm-hmm. My philosophy towards my hunts is I'm not just trying to out hunt the deer. I am out hunting everybody else in the woods. I don't want to be the reason that ruined my hunt. You know what I mean? Yep. I'm hunting better than everybody else. That's my mindset going into a hunt. Mm-hmm. So I like putting myself in that mindset because I feel like it keeps me sharp and can put a good, you know, tactical hunt on animals like this.
Yep. So the next thing we got, and these all kind of tie together a little bit. But the next one is, you know, a lot of people go in there with that mindset, like we're talking about, you got to be careful with your access and you don't want to spook them and this and that and the other. And it turns into not being aggressive enough, right? Yeah. You mentioned before, mm-hmm. you see a lot of guys hunting like they see on TV or the big shows that you watch, right? Most of those guys are hunting private land. When you're hunting private ground, you can hunt the edges, and I actually recommend it. You know, like, hunt the edges. Don't put too much pressure on that deer. You can absolutely be aggressive on him when you need to be, mm-hmm. but if he's living there and he's on your property, then by all means, let him be there and hunt him on the outskirts and let him make the mistake, right? Don't get there too absolutely. Deep and try to make the mistake. On public land, though, you can't do that and be successful consistently. You have to go be aggressive, do your scouting, find where those deer are at, and then get in tight to them if you want to kill them in the daylight. Because most of the time, unless you just get lucky sometime in November and that buck comes by following a doe, he's not getting very far from his bed on pressured ground in the daylight. So you got to push back in there and be aggressive. So not being aggressive enough is definitely like one of the top five mistakes that we see guys make.
Absolutely. And I mean, you see it all the time. You walk in public land and you got tree stands set up over, you know, cut cornfields and right on edges of clear fields. You know, if you're hunting the edge of a CRP, great. Hunting edge of standing corn and standing beans, you know, especially early season, and that October lull can be very beneficial.
Yep.
Hunt, right? Because there's a lot of cover still in that area. But, you know, don't get caught up hunting how you might see somebody else, like on TV, hunting, and not take into consideration some seriously important factors that lead to their success hunting that way, mm-hmm. that will not lead to your success just because the properties are different. You know what I mean? Yep. That's why there's no such thing as one size fits all approach to even person to person, but definitely property to property, just because there's a lot of factors that deer are still deer, but there's still a lot of factors that go into it. And hunting pressures is more than likely the top, I would say.
Yeah.
Factor as to how to adjust your hunting strategy.
Mm-hmm. And if you have a pressured deer on a pressured property, then you're going to have to be a little more aggressive than one that's just not really used to people, kind of doing their own thing. They're moving more in the daylight, away from their bed throughout the year, not just during the rut.
Yep.
On public land where you do have that pressure, sometimes, a lot of times, you got to go in and get them.
Absolutely. And that's where you got to be extremely precise with your hunts and something. And pretty much, you know, most of these guys, that they ended up shot because I already knew where I wanted to hunt, but I also knew I had to wait for the perfect conditions.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? My philosophy to that is I want to kill them on the first or second hunt in there, right? That's my goal for that whole scenario. Because the more you access it, the more you hunt it, the more likely he is to pick up and the rest of the deer herd to pick up on your presence, mm-hmm. right? And blow out your stand location. But, you know, it's that surprise effect that you're putting in your favor by being aggressive enough and going and getting that deer, but doing it in a manner that's not careless, but in a very precise way. Yep. You know what I mean?
And that leads us right into the next mistake, which is just the flip side of that. You just kind of said it there, being too aggressive, because there are also those shows and those channels that show these guys going in, bumping, dumping, like mm-hmm. they go straight into the middle of the bedding area. Will that work sometimes? Yeah. If you've got a buck that's dominant in the area and that's absolutely where he wants to bed, you might get away with bumping that deer out, setting up in his bedroom and him coming back in the daylight, right? But there's also a time for that and a place for that, and it's not all the time and it's not every place. You can absolutely take what we're saying about being aggressive, take it too far and be too aggressive, and now you're right back to what we were talking about at the beginning, being careless with how you're entering and exiting, being careless with your wind and how you're setting up your stands, being careless even with where you're putting and how you're checking trail cameras, right? And then mm-hmm. you turn into those guys we talked about earlier that are bumping that deer and never seeing them, versus, yes, you're being aggressive and going in there and getting close, but you're also not being too aggressive. You know when to stop. You know your limits. You know where to set up on what days with what wind that's going to give you the best chance without going overboard.
Yeah, and it's that philosophy, you can't kill them while you're on the couch, right? To an extent, right?
Right.
You can 100% keep yourself from killing him by hunting a poor condition day. You know what I mean? If you would have just chilled, either went and hunted a complete different location, hunt a different location. If you're that into needing to hunt that you can't just sit down and chill on that warm weather, bad wind day, right? And in 3 days, you've got a cold front coming in, right? You can 100% keep yourself from killing that deer in 3 days if you go hunt today. You know what I mean? It's one of those things that, yes, you're correct. If you're not in your tree stand, you're not going to kill that deer, right? But you can keep yourself from killing that deer on a future date by hunting too aggressively and just kind of carelessly.
Yeah, and that's the thing where, you know, a lot of guys, they got a certain amount of vacation, or they're just, it's a Saturday, Sunday, they're getting to hunt, and they're like, this is my day to hunt, I'm going. That's fine. Like you said, though, don't go to your best spot. Go to an observation sit. And if you're not into that because you think you're not in the game, find somewhere in between that still has a good wind for where you're at, that you feel like you have a chance of maybe shooting something, but also you're not getting in there being too aggressive and bumping that deer and scaring them away. Like you said, ruining future hunts because you just had to go hunt that day because that was your day off. I completely get wanting to hunt on your day off. And if I know a lot of guys only get a very limited time to be in the woods, but let's say you get 5 days off in a year. If you go in there those first 2 days and they're not good, but you go to your best spot, guess what your other 3 days are going to be? Probably not good
Not good.
either. So keep that in mind. Don't be too aggressive no matter the circumstances, whether it's your only time to hunt, whether you just know that big buck's back there, you got today to go after him, so I need to get in there after him. Well, he's likely still going to be there. If it's been this long and he's there, he's likely to still be there when you get a chance to go in on a good day. And if someone happens to sneak in there and slip in and kill him before you get a chance at him, that's part of the game, right?
Yeah, 100%. And it's also that can tie right into proper preparation. You know what I mean? That there is that deer has a specific location for every condition, right? Every wet weather and wind, every wind direction, every weather condition, he has his specific locations that he prefers to be. And if you've done enough research, if you've done enough work in preparation, there's a decent chance that you actually have great south wind locations and great north wind locations, right? So if you've got limited time, it's not like you're just throwing a shot in the dark kind of random hunt, or you're blowing out your great north wind hunt on a warm south wind day. You may actually be in the game for that deer, or even a different deer, you know, a different deer having options, a different deer on a southern wind. Because you did enough research and put yourself in position to know that, hey, I only have X amount of time, right? So I need to be ready for all conditions, whether it's a north wind or south wind. Obviously, north wind preferred, but you can only control that weather so much.
Exactly.
So if that weekend is 70 degrees and a southern wind, and you know where he likes to hang out on his southern wind days, you could be in a hunt still.
Yep. And that's like you said, that all goes into preparation, which is the next one we want to hit on, is being underprepared to go out there on the good day or even on the bad day, right? Like you see so many times guys just, it's like they wake up one day and they think, well, I'm going to go out here and kill a big buck today. That's not really how it works. It might look like that because you watched a video of someone kill one on public ground on the internet and it looked really easy. But just because they didn't document or didn't show on that particular episode all the hours and sweat that they had put into finding that deer, finding that spot, getting that set up just perfect, or at least as close as they can get it to actually go in there and harvest that deer. You have to put in the time of preparation to give yourself that opportunity. And that's with, like you said, the scouting part of it and knowing where that deer likes to be on this day, where he likes to be on this day, his travel routes, right? Where he's staying earlier in the season versus the rut versus late season, right? There's all of those that play into it. If you got trail cameras, great. If you don't, you can still figure that stuff out with some scouting. It's all that stuff, but it's also being physically and mentally prepared yourself, right?
Absolutely. And especially public land, anybody who's trekked around public land enough knows that it can be pretty physically exhausting because you just have to put the miles on your boots. And, it could be that there's, I'll spend, multiple days on a property and find a handful of locations that I actually paid any attention to. You know what I mean? Just because the sign was there. And where, but it could be multiple miles and hours from one spot to the next. I do my e-scouting. I find potential areas that could be good, but I show up and there's no sign. Well, there's more than likely it's a hunting pressure reason. You know what I mean? So that's okay. Move on. And then you find the areas that do have the sign you're looking for. Then you slow down and you grid search and you really dive into picking apart that area, finding all your feed trees, potential stand locations. How in the world am I going to access this? How does the wind play in this area? And it could be, a few thousand acre property, and I only have a few spots that I actually want to focus on. That is not at all abnormal to my hunting. It could be a 7,000 acre property and I have 3 to 5 specific locations that I'm actually paying any attention to. You know what I mean? So that's where a big mistake I have made in the past is putting all of my chips into one bag, where this is the property I'm hunting and this is a specific location I'm hunting because there's a lot of really good sign here, And then you do that all year and you don't end up killing your deer because you ran out of options. You didn't have enough options. So that's something I try to do too, especially on the public land game, because there's been too many times that I have scattered a property hard and I've got a buck pinned and I'm just waiting for the right conditions. And then a group of guys comes in and starts hunting and pounding the ground and pushes all the deer out. Sign dries up. I've seen that way too many times where I've got it a location pegged, and the next week I have a cold front coming in, which is going to be perfect. I show up, it's like a ghost town compared to when I hunted last. Scrapes are kind of dry, rubs are kind of dry. It's just nothing there, like especially the way it was even the week before. And then you start finding out, okay, well, a group of guys moved in a week, a day after I left, and had been doing nothing but scouting and walking and putting and pushing through this thick bedding cover. And well, the deer moved off. So if I didn't have ulterior options to move to, I pretty much lost my hunt, So just having a lot of options on your tool belt is a really good skill to have. It takes a lot of time and a lot of miles and goes to that being physically fit enough to cover enough ground to make that happen. But if you can do that, you really put stack the cards in your favor to going home with a good buck that season.
And I don't want to move past the physical part of it just yet either, because I think this is something to me where it gets lost on a lot of the Midwest guys. Because when you're talking about going out west and hunting the mountains, hunting high elevation, when you're going out there, everybody's talking about fitness, right? And I got to get in good shape to go on this elk hunt or this mule deer hunt, whatever it is, because I know I'm going to have to hike in the hell of high elevation and I'm going to have to pack stuff out. Well, what that is also is an advantage. You could go out there and not be in good shape, right? But you're probably not going to have as good a hunt because you can't get away from the pressure. You can't go back to where those animals are because either you just physically can't get there or you can't get them out once you do get there, right? So it's a limitation. Being physically fit is an advantage in that scenario. It's also the same way for whitetail hunting, whether you're public land or private land, especially on public land, because like we were talking about, some of these spots you got to get to, if it's 5,000, 6,000 acres, if you've got a couple different locations, they're probably not together, right? Like you're hunting here on this wind in this scenario, you're hunting there on that scenario, if the pressure comes in and moves things, right? And it could be that you've got 1 or 2 days to scout all that. So you got to cover some ground. You have to be able to cover some
Got to
ground.
move.
What I don't understand is guys will spend all the money in the world on the new bow, the broadheads they think are the best, the arrows, the sight, the release, the boots, the camo system, tons of money they'll spend on that stuff. Because what's that stuff do? At least perceived, gives them an advantage, right? And if you're confident in it, it can give you some mental advantage too, right? But like picking up something heavy and carrying it or going on a run costs $0. And that can be a huge advantage even for a whitetail hunter. But I've seen fat guys do it on TV, so that's what I'm going to do. And yeah. Can you do it that way? Absolutely. But especially we're talking public ground and even private. It definitely is an advantage there too. But on public specifically, there's such a huge advantage to, and you don't have to be freaking David Goggins in shape, you know, but at least competent in your physical fitness, you know. I think that's something, that's a gripe that I have a lot. I don't know if it's a gripe, but it's like something that I look at with whitetail hunters and Midwest hunters across the board, a lot of them, not everybody, but a lot of them. And it's like, it's right there. It costs you nothing. All you have to do is put in a little bit of work. You've already spent all this money. Why not give yourself that advantage too?
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you nailed it with, you may only have 2 days to scout. We talked about having limited time to hunt. Well, if same idea, if you've got 2 days to scout and you've got 7,000 acres to cover, you need to be extremely precise with what you scout and how long you stay in a specific area. You get really good about being very efficient. But, you know, it's nothing for me to put down, you know, 30,000 steps in a day, in certain areas. And that's not all flat ground, you know, that's inclined and whatnot. But also, and I see a big advantage of it walking in the morning, carrying in your set, is being physically fit. I'm not soaked with sweat by the time I get to my tree. So I'm not having to carry a bunch of extra clothes to change out of, so I don't get hypothermia sitting in my tree stand.
And you can stay longer. I mean? So,
and I can stay a lot longer. So it's kind of one of those things, you know, it's a comfort level. And then you have the ability to cover ground, and that goes into hunting better than the next guy. Well, that also is, hey, I can cover more ground, which means I have more options and can do more. You know what I mean? So it's just, you're just stacking as many cards in your favor as you possibly can, just because you've got a lot of competition out there. So the more you can do to give yourself any and all kind of advantage possible, you're more than a lot likely you're going to win over time.
Yeah. So, and that's, you're going to be more apt to go to those distances,
and it's more enjoyable.
Oh, absolutely.
Because you don't feel horrible.
Exactly.
But when you get there,
so you're more likely to even hunt more often, right?
Yeah.
And you're way more likely to go to those spots that are farther away from the people, farther away from the pressure, with your pack, whether you're saddle hunting or whether you're stand hunting, hanging hunting, whatever it is, you're more likely to go do that stuff. Talk about spot and stalking. Like if you're doing that the right way, or even still hunting and going slow, that can take a physical toll on you. If you're doing that for a long period of time, up and down hills, you've got those tools in your belt now. Like you mentioned the tool belt earlier, you can go do those things for a longer period of time for a farther distance. And let's say you're going in on an afternoon hunt and you climbed up in this tree and you're just absolutely beat, tired, winded, sweating. You just get set up and that buck comes by at 2:30 in the afternoon. Like now you got to make that shot. You got to draw your bow back and make that shot. Well, you are absolutely gassed and just dying because it was so difficult for you to get back there. Whereas if you just put in a little bit of time and effort, you'd probably be breathing normal. That deer comes in. And that's the other part of it too, not even just in that scenario. The more fit you are, I think the less affected you are by the excitement of the moment too, right?
100%.
And if you're doing fitness right, you're stressing yourself out and you're struggling. So there's something to be said for the mental toughness that comes from putting yourself through a tough situation. Because let's face it, most of us from day to day, not facing that many tough situations, right? Like it's pretty comfortable life. It can be as comfortable as you want it to be. So sometimes you have to manufacture those. And that helps with your mental toughness, and that helps you kind of relax in those stressful moments too, right? You learn to adapt and deal with those stressful situations in a much better way than if this is your first time, that 200-inch buck is walking by and you're gassed from walking in, or you're just super excited, and that's stress. And if you have no idea how to handle that, forget about it. You're not putting that arrow where it needs to go.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, I come, you know, I used to compete powerlifting and you know, when you've got over 300 pounds in your hands on a bench press and you're starting to fail, you know, that's
talking about stress.
Makes you want to control yourself a little bit, right? Uh-huh. You know? So it's, yeah, I mean, it helps train your brain. And, you know, last year, the day before I killed my buck, I held my draw on him, you know, for over 2 minutes. My GoPro counted 130 seconds. I held my draw on this deer for, you know, I had him at 30 yards with no clean shot. And I over, you know, my arms started cramping. They started giving out. So I had to slowly let my bow down. And if I wasn't capable of doing that in a very controlled manner, I 100% would have bumped that deer, because I wasn't 10 feet off the ground in the tree I was in. I had a lot of fantastic cover. It was an awesome tree to hunt, even though it wasn't very high.
Right.
But he was looking in my direction. He wasn't looking at me, but there were deer behind me. I was perfectly in the middle between him and other deer. And if I was not careful enough with how I put that bow down, he 100% would have busted me.
Yep.
And I more than likely would not have killed him the next day I was there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's just scenarios like that where, yeah, I'm giving out. I'm shaking. I'm giving out and cramping. But you got to hold it together, because, one, he may have actually given me another opportunity that night. You know what I mean? Who knows? Maybe if I let down, he relaxed and started to move off, I could have redrew and got a shot on him. You know, I needed 10 feet until he gave me a shot. So who knows? I could have let it down, and then he immediately could have started to move to give me a shot. I could have redrew and made the shot.
Yep.
So it's just, it's controlling that, your mind in scenarios like that, and being able to control yourself physically. It helps a lot in stressful situations like that.
I think we probably should do like a whole full draw Friday just on the physical mental fitness for hunting. I think that would be a great one, especially with your background. You could talk on that for a long time too, I'm sure. And even talking about the different ways you can do that kind of stuff, right? Because there, I mean, you can train specifically for hunting. There's no reason you couldn't, right? And there's certain things that help with that. But I don't want to run too long here. So our last one that we got is, again, just kind of like the last two. It's a little bit of an opposite of the being prepared. Not that I don't think you can be over-prepared necessarily, but you can definitely overthink what you're doing, right? So overthinking it. Yeah. That's our fifth one. Whether that's you're trying to get so far away that you walk past something that might be good or of interest, like you're only thinking, I have to get far away from people, so you're not scouting your way back to a spot or whatever it is. Maybe it's you're overthinking the setup and you're in a spot that might be good, but you're like, well, this isn't the absolute perfect tree, or this is the absolute perfect trail, or something like that. You can definitely overthink your way out of a buck too, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's something that I talk a lot about on my videos and some posts and stuff throughout the years, is listening to what the deer are telling me. You know what I mean? It's that they're going to tell you where they feel comfortable. It's up to us to pick up on it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Where if you're hyper-focused on, I have to get as far away as possible, or if you're hyper-focused on, I've got to get 20-plus feet in a tree, you could miss setups. Right, where I just talked about, I was 10 feet in a tree, right, where this specific tree gave me the most shootability in that specific location, right, where, you know, public land, you can't go trim it a bunch of shooting lanes,
right?
You know, you got to hunt with what you're given. But this specific tree gave me a ton of cover. You know, it was a tree that shot out into three trunks. It just gave me a lot of cover, right? And it was a great sit, even though I was 10 feet off the ground, you know?
Yep.
So if I was just interested in sitting in that pin oak, that was over the way, but had a ton of foliage around it and had a real low canopy. I wouldn't have had a lot of shootability
Right.
in that spot, right? I wouldn't be able to cover the trails I needed to cover. And so if you keep a closed mind to certain things and unable to make adjustments accordingly based off of what you find, you could be missing the spot, the location that you should be. And if you're going into an area thinking that you're only going to hunt areas with a giant signpost rubs, and giant scrapes, and that's what you're looking for. Well, I've had a lot of areas where that buck was leaving very precise sign. It's not widespread sign, it's precise sign. And the only reason I know is because I collected enough data from that property to know that that is significant sign in comparison to the rest of the property.
Right.
Where a bunch of other properties I hunt, that is sign that I would walk past because I know there's better sign. The real sign I want looks different, right? So it's adjusting your expectations and adjusting your mentality to what the deer are actually doing on property, to what you think you want to find. You know what I mean? So, and Kentucky was a big one for me. The property I hunt in Kentucky is a big one, where that property is loaded with mega giants and very, very, very mature deer in a lot of them, but doesn't have nearly the size of sign as what I'll find in Missouri, Kansas, and Iowa. You know what I mean? But there are more, a higher number of the caliber of buck that I'm after there compared to what these other properties are, where there's a couple of them, but they're leaving more aggressive sign. So it's adjusting to that, knowing, hey, I'm not going to go to this property and find the car hood side scrapes that I want to find that I'm looking for on these other properties, but it's adjusting that, and like you said, not walking past that location that the deer are actually in because you're trying to get furthest away. Remember, there's no such thing as a hidden honey hole that no one gets to in the Midwest. There's no such thing as that. So you could be walking in search of that. You could be walking past where that buck is actually surviving, right? Where he has figured out that if I'm right here, everybody walks around me and I can see him coming and knows exactly how to survive in that specific location, but knows that everybody just walks right past him.
He's got it figured out.
He does. He has it figured out. And that's where it's up to us as a hunter to keep our mind open to scenarios like that. Especially as public land's gotten more popular, the idea of walking further, where it used to be the game. Back when I was a kid and younger in my career, walking further was how you won. Not anymore. Equipment's a lot lighter than it's ever been. People are learning that fitness is a very important piece to this puzzle, and people have learned that you got to try to get away from people. So no longer is it walking further anymore. You know what I mean? So that trick is pretty much out the books now. And now the guys who win are the ones that are being more creative and keeping their mind open to and making adjustments to what the deer are doing on that property and how that they're using that property, because the deer know how the humans use it. So it's up to us to adjust ourselves accordingly as well.
And I think just to kind of put a bow on this episode and this the overthinking it part, if you're doing something and you're just trying so hard and you're doing all of these things that you've learned about or you've listened to guys talk about on YouTube, and this guy's saying this thing and this guy's saying the other thing, you don't really know what to do, and you're trying this and you're trying that and nothing just seems to be working, just take a step back, back up and punt, as we like to say, right? Keep it simple, stupid, the old acronym. Back up, take a breath, kind of, just step away from it for a second and look at the whole picture and think, okay, I need to find a good trail on a saddle with decent buck sign around, and find a scrape and hunt it on that trail somewhere, right? Yeah. Like just go back and start from the basics.
The basics.
And then rebuild from there, right? Yep. You can get so down into the weeds on equipment and tactics and where to find these deer and how to find them, how to hunt them. We've talked about a lot of them here, like a lot of the different things that, that you see out there. You can get so bogged down with that that sometimes all you got to do is take a step back, take a breath, go back to the simple things that you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
It might be, it's just, if like you said, it might not be the great big scrape, the great big rub. If you've been hunting that and it ain't working, okay, I saw some buck sign over here, though, and it was in a location that I, a secluded water hole, you know, mm-hmm. and it's yep. been warm. So, hey, maybe give that a shot, you know. Go back mm-hmm. to those, the surefire setups that are tried and true, and then yeah. and then build your way back out from there. Give yourself a base, a foundation, and start to work from there. I think that's one of the best things you can do if you're, if you feel like you're trying everything and nothing's working, just go back to the basics.
Yeah, and be careful what you listen to on social media. You know what I mean? Strong opinions. Anybody who ever says that this is the only way to do something,
yep.
you probably should not listen to that person. Or, right. or if you do, take pieces of what they're saying. Because mm-hmm. anybody who says that there's one way to do something is completely wrong and is honestly trying to sell you something.
Exactly.
So why... It's never made any sense to me where if this guy does it this way and has just as much success as what this guy is doing mm-hmm. on same types of properties, right? And they're both equally successful, but hunting differently. How can you actually say one is wrong?
Right.
You know what I mean? It's never made any sense to me where how can you sit there and really say that one person is more correct than another when they both have equal resumes, they just do it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, then why don't you learn from both instead of saying one is wrong over another? Why don't you take parts of both, learn from both, mm-hmm. and then fine tune your specific approach to what you enjoy, your style of hunting that you enjoy, and your time allowed, and just a lot of things go into finding that, but fine tune your specific approach, learn from everybody, but don't get so caught up in the strong opinions that you forget to stick to the basics.
Mm-hmm. Yep. If it seems like someone's trying to sell you something, like if they're trying really hard, it seems like they're trying really hard. They're probably trying to sell you something, you know?
More than likely. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So keep that in mind for sure. That's a big one on a lot of things, especially hunting tactics. That's going to do it for this episode. I think it makes the most sense for the next one. We just talk about the top five private land hunting mistakes, because some of these could overlap a little bit, but I can think of five. I've thought of five while we were talking here that guys do on private land that are big mistakes. So I think that makes the most sense to do that one. So everybody watching, stay tuned for that. If you want more from Austin, go to Tactical Approach Outdoors, basically anywhere on social media, on YouTube, and then tacticalapproachoutdoors.com is the website. And then you can also go over to ridgehunteroutdoors.com. We just dropped some new merch. We've got some fixed blade stuff and some mechanical stuff, because everybody likes to, and whether you shoot one or the other, you kind of like to tell everybody else what you shoot, right? So we got some of that stuff.
It goes to the opinion side of things, right back to it, right?
Exactly. So we got some of that stuff. We got these super cool hats that are embroidered with your state on them. So whatever state you're in, you can get that. It's with the throwback camo. They're super cool. We got some other stuff on there, too, that I think you guys are going to enjoy. So ridgehunteroutdoors.com for that. With all that said, I'm Canyon. That's Austin over there. We will see you guys on the next one.